The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
We are going to have a chat with Stephanie Sigelski. She is Vice President of Public Relations for the International Council of Shopping Centers, more often referred to as ICSC, and she also serves as an adjunct professor at NYU's Graduate School of Professional Studies. She has spent much of her career working on public policy issues at both the state and federal levels. She's going to join us to discuss the 2018 RECON conference, the Global Retail Real Estate Convention. It was held May 20 through 23rd at the Las Vegas Convention Center. And we did not have a reporter on the ground, so we're actually going to dial Stephanie up, and she's going to go ahead and give us an account of how things went.
Please stand by.
Hello?
Stephanie.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm fine. It's Mike Consul at Real Assets Advisor Magazine. I appreciate you taking the time to join me and go over how things went at the conference. This convention, every year, it's such a big one, and it's just loaded with more import than ever because 2017 was another brutal year for retail. Yet at the same time, there's many in the business that insist that the future is bright for retail. It just needs to make some adjustments. What were the major takeaways from the RECON conference?
Well, I think this year there was definitely a positive vibe that flowed throughout the event. You know, 2017 was a difficult year. We did feel that last year in the feeling on the floor and just sort of the general buzz. But this year, it was very vibrant, very exciting, and everybody had a great positive attitude for the entirety of the show.
You're saying the atmosphere is generally positive. Was attendance up or down or flat?
It was in line with last year. We don't have final numbers yet, but we were trending in line with last year throughout the event.
So it was about the same as the previous year. Okay, so let's get back to the takeaways from the conference, though. People were optimistic. Why were they optimistic? What, obviously, retailing has had some broadsides. So my question would be, what is making them optimistic? What are they saying? What are they optimistic about? Or what are they saying needs to happen or is happening in retail that's going to make for a better future?
I think one of the things that we're seeing is a lot of the online-only retailers are coming to the brick-and-mortar space. So you're seeing this new entrance into the marketplace by a lot of different retailers, and that's exciting. We had the UNTUCKit CEO on a panel, and he was talking about their plans this year alone to open upwards of 80 stores throughout the country, which is obviously a very exciting thing. And they're seeing the benefits of doing that through increased online sales. So I think more and more online-only retailers are starting to do that. You know, we did make it through last year. I think the last year and a half was a little difficult with the presidential election, and people were just a little bit unsure of what would happen with the economy. But the economy has been strong, and with the Tax and Jobs Act that was passed last December, it just made a lot of people feel a little bit more grounded and secure with the economy, which means that people are looking for space to open stores, and there's space to be had.
In case our listeners aren't familiar with UNTUCKit, that is a company that makes shirts that are untucked. They actually tailor them in a way that so that they basically end just below the belt line. I know they make them for men. I'm not sure about whether they make them for women or not. But they, you're saying they're going to open 80 stores. Talk a little bit about why. I mean, even Amazon's talked about opening a brick and mortar store or a series of stores, And we saw Apple do it in a spectacular way quite a few years ago now. What do they see as the advantage of opening brick and mortar stores? When you think about somebody like Amazon, they're doing extremely well with just the online presence. And then UnTucket seems to have done very well with just an online presence. What's the advantages to having the brick and mortar stores?
I think there are a few things. I mean, I think that there's brand awareness. People are walking by their stores. The halo effect of opening a store and seeing online sales for UnTucket, they've seen upwards, they've seen double digits sales increases of online sales in the areas where they've opened a store. So that brand awareness is significant. So that's valuable. There's a customer service aspect. People like the in-person, the personal customer service, something that's personalized to them. So that's very valuable as well. Amazon is opening brick and mortar stores. There's at least two of them here in New York City that are doing quite well. And they invested in 350 brick and mortar stores with the purchase of Whole Foods almost a year ago now. So I think that there's a recognition that the brick and mortar piece isn't going away. And quite honestly, Amazon recognizes that in that they have great profit in their cloud services, but not necessarily their online sales services due to the free shipping component. So they cut that piece of it out, and the profit margins become better for them. But it really has everything to do with the consumer and in tailoring an experience to the consumer that will keep them coming back.
Well, talk about Amazon for a moment, because I have not been in an Amazon store, and I would guess it. The vast majority of our listeners have never been in an Amazon store, being that they're so new. Amazon has literally millions of products. So what are they devoting the store to? Do they actually have product in the store, or is it more computer terminals and people to help guide them through the various services that are available, whether it's Amazon Prime or the and it's original some of the programming that it's doing, as well as perhaps some of the smart ways to shop on the site. What exactly is in the store?
So they have a couple of different things going on. One, they are selling physical books in a number of stores on a smaller scale than what the historic bookstore has done, but they are definitely showcasing products like Alexa that people can go in and interact with and understand how to use it to try to generate that sale. You might not buy it if you're not really certain what it's going to do, but when you go into the store and try it, you might fall in love with it. The other great thing that Amazon's taking advantage of is the data that they have. So they know, within a six-block radius of the store, because of the zip codes, what the typical products people buy are, and they can actually stock the stores to cater to that. So they're very much using the data that they've already collected, as well as selling their own products and their books.
Major advantage, yeah, the amount of data that they have collected is pretty extraordinary. Now, on the flip side of that, Stephanie, we see traditional retailers that have an online presence, but they're going to, or maybe they're new to the online presence, they're going to this omni-channel approach. I would imagine that was at least part of the conversation at the convention as well. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. The omni-channel piece is key. Consumers today more than ever want as many options to shop as they can get. So whether that's buying online and having it shipped to their home, or buying online and picking it up in store, or shopping in store, the more convenience that they can have, the better. And I think that many, retailers are starting to really realize that. But a lot of the property owners are realizing that as well, and creating space within their existing footprint where they can collect those items purchased online, and then the consumer can make one stop to pick up those items. And the interesting thing about that is we found that, upwards of 35% of people who buy online and pick up in store end up making another purchase while they're there. So it's incredibly beneficial to have that available. You know, and I think it goes, listen, Domino's has just announced that they're going to have these hotspots for pizza delivery. So if you're sitting in the park and there's a Domino's hotspot, they'll actually deliver your pizza to you in the park. And I think that we're going to see things like that, not necessarily on the delivery of retail goods, but people really, you know, relying on technology we already live in a very, very digital age, and people are going to want that technology incorporated more, and Omnichannel really does that.
Now, there have been a lot of store closings. There have been retailers that have gone bankrupt. Was there any talk at all about the mistakes that were made that drove some of the major names out of business? And also, there's a lot of retailers that are still at risk, some of them longtime traditional retailers. What about the current atmosphere is causing that?
No, I think there's a couple of things going on. I think you have a Toys R Us situation where, you know, they were just so debt heavy and they were over leveraged that they couldn't invest that money back into their stores, and that was a problem. Anytime you have that sort of a leveraged buyout, it is very difficult to become profitable after. And that's what happened to Toys R Us. You know, there are other stores, you know, like a Sears, for example, who has been just trying to stay afloat for what feels like decades now. So I think some of what's going on is you've got, you know, issues in the capital markets, but you also have business models that need to be changed. Because of the consumer, because of changing demographics and changing technology. And the retailers are becoming, you know, acutely aware of that now and trying to make changes accordingly.
You know, I've said before that there's no property type in real estate or maybe any business anywhere that requires more management agility than retail. It changes so fast, and it's not just the technology. It's also has to do with changing neighborhoods, and then consumer preferences seem to change faster all the time. One of the arguments that have been made against retail over the years is that the United States is over retail. There's just too much retail space. Was that discussed at all? Was there any kind of consensus whether the United States just has too much physical retail space and that needs to be downsized?
Well, I think that there's always that discussion going on, and what do you do with that space? You know, yes, if you look at the GLA numbers, the United States is much higher than other countries. Now, you know, our physical landscape is different than a lot of countries, and that can be part of it. But, you know, I think that where some people might say that, you know, we're overbuilt, a lot of other developers and financiers will say it is a significant opportunity for redevelopment and to redevelop what communities want. Communities may not want the classic mall anymore. They may want mixed use with first floor of retail and restaurants and on the second floor of living. It's an opportunity to redevelop, to bring in, you know, healthcare, education. So I think what's happening is it's, a lot of people are viewing it as opportunity rather than problematic.
And you mentioned shopping malls. Obviously, it appears they've simply gone out of vogue, and a lot of them have gotten kind of shop worn. Did the shopping mall, was that a topic of conversation at all during this, or was that really not on the agenda? It almost feels like the shopping mall is something that everybody's kind of decided is, as I say, out of vogue, and those happen to be pieces of real estate that a lot of people are talking about redeveloping as satellite campuses for colleges or senior living centers or what have you. What about that? Not the redevelopment part, but even whether there was a conversation about shopping malls and whether there's an opportunity to really resurrect them.
Well, I think, you know, it just depends on what type of mall or what type of community you're in as to what conversation you're having around that. Obviously, the high-end, luxury filled malls are doing very well and have no intention of doing anything differently. you know, the lower end ones who may be in areas that are economically struggling. So naturally they're going to struggle. The conversation is probably a little more prevalent. But it is definitely, you know, an opportunity to change things up. And the most important thing for any of these developments, you know, whether it's new, and we're not seeing a lot of new construction. We are seeing a lot of development, a lot of redevelopment going on, which I think is a good thing. But it's important to understand what the local community wants or needs. So if, you know, you have a community full of baby boomers, they're going to want something vastly different than a community full of millennials. So, you know, those malls might be, you know, repurposed into something, you know, much more filled with food and beverage or experience while still offering retail. It really depends on the local community.
So how has ICSC changed RECON in recent years, or how does it expect the convention to evolve in the future? For instance, the RECON this year, the convention you held this year, how different is it from the same convention held 3 or 5 years ago? And then looking forward, do you expect a lot of change in the future?
RECON is an interesting event because a lot of the purpose for people to go is to make deals. And it's still very much a deal-making event, and those who attend want it to stay that way. So I think that will still be the main focus of it. That said, you know, we are, as ICSC, we're focused heavily on the professional development and what can we offer to attendees to help them be prepared for the future. This year, not only did we have, you know, a full slate of professional development that talked about, you know, mixed use and healthcare and whatnot, but we also had what was called the Innovation Exchange that housed about 24 startup tech companies who are very retail focused and likely to be incorporated into a store, you know, your local retailer in the years to come. And that can involve anything from, you know, checking out to how you try your clothes on, and, you know, the visual displays within the store. So I think for us it's important to be forward-looking and see that technology and see those changes coming and provide that information to those who attend. But it's also important to the attendees that they still have the opportunity to do the deal-making that they value.
So the deal making you're talking about, I would imagine, is primarily between product people and the retailers. Is that the lion's share of the wheeling and dealing that's done at RECON?
It's usually between property people and retailers.
Oh, okay, I see. All right, very well. So, what, just generally speaking, Stephanie, since you're pretty well steeped in this, what's next for retail? I mean, as you look down the road, obviously technology has played a big role in retail, but technology is advancing very quickly. Do you have any sense for where retail is headed or where you expect it to be in the next two or five years?
Well, I think that retailers will start looking at smaller footprints. They'll start keeping less inventory on site, as again, this whole omni-channel piece and people wanting convenience. They will make their the technology piece will be important and very experiential, and so consumers will be very much engaged. I also think that we're likely to continue to see less apparel stores, that we've typically seen in the decades past, and more kind of food and beverage options and experience type options. So we're going to definitely see a different tenant mixture at our local malls and centers.
Our guest has been Stephanie Sigelski. She is Vice President of Public Relations for the International Council of Shopping Centers. Stephanie, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.